it ice cream or is it poop?
It's poop.
What do you mean it was ice cream? Well, somebody... Where did you get this information that it was ice cream?
Parents trying to convince themselves that they didn't accidentally dress their kid up as poop. Nope, they absolutely dressed their kid up as poop. That is not soft serve ice cream.
I mean, that's what I was saying, like a chocolate soft served ice cream. That was a while back.
This is like my grandmother thinking that LOL means lots of love. Like, that's great, Grandma. You're allowed to think that, but it's not right. That's not what it means.
But there's so many,
please stop sending LOL after Grandpa's heart surgery. It's like, that's...
It's not funny.
I don't think that's what she means in those moments.
Welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning.
This is Grandma. Just in case she's listening.
Aw, sweet.
Probably not. My mom does, apparently.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Shout out to Pam Bowser.
This is Patrick Nazaroff. With me, as always, Pastor David Bowser.
How you doing, Patrick?
And Katie Phillips.
Hello, Patrick.
Someday maybe we should, like, switch and pretend to be someone else. We each take on someone else's personality.
Like an accent?
Do I have an accent?
Like you're going to use an accent?
No, like I would pretend to be you. Oh. And you would pretend to be Katie.
But they will know by our voices.
They'll know by our love.
Yes.
You're Christians.
Right, no, we're Christians. By our love. They'll know that we're podcasters by our bad voices. Jokes.
Yikes.
Already off to a rocky start. Here we go.
You know, this is probably about the same start as always.
Yeah, buckle up.
Most of our listeners are probably used to it at this point. If you've survived up until this point, you know what you're getting.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right, we've got some news. The Lutheran Church is in the news. We got that. But first we have some of our fake news. Wow.
Got sad all of a sudden.
Are y'all reality TV show fans?
Yes.
Negative.
Well, it depends on what it is. I
guess if you count like...
Great British Baking Show.
Yeah, if you count like competition shows, I'll watch the...
That's reality TV.
Yeah, so like competition where there's like a clear, like we're trying...
Chopped.
Yeah, like Chopped...
Mm-hmm. Great British Bake Off. Cooking related.
Yeah, mostly cooking related. Okay. That's true.
A cooking show. This one's
occasional HGTV. Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I'm a huge Big Brother fan.
Okay. Oh, Big Brother's terrible.
And Bachelor. Yeah. And Bachelorette.
Also garbage. Oh, and garbage, yes. Maybe this will be a show that interests you, both of you, because I probably garbage and food's involved.
All right, excellent.
UK reality show challenges meat loving families to go vegetarian or be forced to eat their pet.
Oh my god.
So wait, you go vegetarian, if you screw up, you have to eat your pet?
Here we go. New British reality show poses a shocking ultimatum to its meat-consuming contestants.
Yeah.
Go vegetarian or kill your pet and eat it.
Well, you signed up for this.
Okay, let me...
Still.
Okay, yeah, you know they show up at your house.
Right, like, you have to do this.
With a gun to your dog's head.
Eat this salad.
The social experiment called Meet the Family. Yes. It's arriving on UK, but yada yada. Four meat-loving families are asked to share their homes with animals they would normally serve for dinner, including a chicken, lamb, pig, and calf.
Oh,
so it's not like your lifelong fluffy.
So yeah, it's not forever. Mittens. Okay. You're not cooking, you're throwing your cat in the oven.
So you're given an animal that you would normally
Yes, they're given
chicken,
an animal
lamb.
To care for.
Okay, you care for that animal, and you have to either go vegetarian or you have to eat the animal that you've been caring for.
Correct, they will live with it.
You know what? Lots of people in the world eat the animals that they care for. That's ranching. That's 4-H. That's life. I'm just saying this, you know.
He's not going to give up meat, apparently.
Not for that.
The families will live with the animal for 3 weeks, taking on walks, playing with it, in a bid to understand its intellectual and emotional capacity.
Sure.
During the experiment, the families travel around their own country and abroad to learn about animal welfare, farming and production, food processing, and the impact animal has on the environment and our health. The show description reads... Right. Would you want to sign up for this?
Was there a prize at the end?
I'm sure potentially a good meal.
It's vegetarian, not vegan, right?
Vegetarian, yes.
I could go vegetarian. I mean, because vegetarian, I'm still allowed to eat like eggs and dairy things, right?
Yeah.
Eggs, cheese, milk.
Myself. And some vegetarians even fish.
That's a pescatarian.
Yeah, it's some vegetarians. I'm...
There's too much.
There's too much. Would you want one of these?
Would you
want
to be a...
I mean...
No, she's keto. She can't do this.
She could certainly eat one of these things then.
Yeah, I mean, I would just sign up to eat the pig or the chicken or the...
I would have no problem going vegetarian for a couple of weeks for some prize at the end. But I don't... Like, if the prize is like moral high ground, I don't need that.
Well, the thing is, it's not just a couple of weeks. At the end of the 3 weeks, the contestants will be forced to make the decision of either going vegetarian forever...
Oh.
and sending the animal to a sanctuary, or remaining meat eaters and killing their new best friend to so cook to and kill eat it.
Anyway,
what's the follow-up? Like how
the sanctuary? It's not.
How's anyone gonna know if I like stop being vegetarian a week later?
They follow you
forever. Like
yeah, they're like, oh, we saw you at Chick-fil-A. Yeah. We're going to the farm right now with the shotgun.
I'll say this: it is London. There's a lot more, a lot more surveillance in England than the US. That is
probably true.
So yeah, we might have that capability. I don't know.
I mean, that's my. That's
I can think of
take.
Other ways I'd prefer to get famous
than eating something.
No, than like not having to. Like, yeah, have not.
Yeah. Not eating something.
I don't know that I'd want to be vegetarian forever.
Managing director says, why do we find it acceptable to eat a lamb, but we wouldn't eat our pet dog? Could you go back to meat once you put a name and face to a meal?
That's a reasonable question.
You know, again, like you said, plenty of Americans,
plenty of people around the world
do this. Yep. You know, they raise animals. Katie lives out in the boondocks, so people out there are doing this right now.
Right.
Do you guys raise animals on your property?
They don't even have pets. They don't have real pets. Much less fake pets.
I was going to say, do they have a fake pet? What's it?
Well, I mean, these animals, you know, like, they're not.
Shelby wants a horse. I said no.
Well, don't eat it.
No. Ooh.
All right, moving on.
Moving on next.
All right. Barack Obama calls out woke culture and Twitter outrage. That's not activism.
I'm going to need lots of definitions in this.
What is woke?
Okay, Barack Obama. Sorry. Former president.
Former president. Got that one. Yeah. All right.
Got it.
What is woke?
What is woke?
All right.
What be woke? Who is woke? Is a person woke?
Yeah, you could be woke.
You're woken up to something? Like you have unveiled. Yeah, keep going. Like your eyes have been unveiled?
Yeah, that is going to be a fairly decent understanding of it, Katie. Woke means, you are awakened to.
That's it. To see how, my eyes have been unveiled.
Yeah, to see.
New podcast idea. Katie defining hip culture.
Yeah. All right.
Whole podcast of Katie giving us definitions.
It's that YouTube video I watched.
Yes.
YouTube.
Yeah, it's primarily used, it's a young man's world, or a young woman's word. Yeah. You know,
woke.
So Barack Obama, calling that out.
So, for example, I'm just going to try to make sure that I understand this. If I pretend like, you know, let's take hunger in our area, right? Because, you know, we live in an area where most people would say, oh, nobody's living in hunger. But there are people who live on the margins and who are going without meals and things like that. So if I were aware of that, I could consider myself woke.
Yeah, I think most of these things would be...
Versus being asleep, I guess.
I think a lot of these...
Or unwoke.
A lot of woke would consider more... social rights issues.
Sure.
Civil rights issues.
I feel like eating is a social right. I'm cool with that.
Yeah, eating like your beloved pet.
No, not
you're woke to that.
Eating, just eating, just having food, being able to feed your family.
Okay, okay. You're woke to it.
Yeah, I mean, if you pretend like you're in an area where no one has that problem, like oh, hunger is somewhere else, and you're not woke, quote unquote.
Okay, it gets funnier every time you'll say it.
I know, right?
Go ahead.
It's gonna keep getting better.
All right.
So read the article headline again.
Oh, right.
Slowly.
Barack Obama calls out woke culture and Twitter outrage. That's not activism.
Woke culture and Twitter outrage.
So just being angry.
Oh.
There's a punctuation in there that is not spoken.
Colon. Right. That's not activism.
Right, there you go.
Okay. All right. Speaking at the Obama Foundation Summit in Chicago last week.
I want to start a Bowser Foundation Summit.
Yeah, good luck. I think this is going to be more successful.
I just want a whole bunch of people to show up and listen to whatever I've got
it's
to
about.
Say.
Mario.
You do that every Sunday.
Good point. Maybe I should just start calling it the Bowser Summit.
Yeah, there you go.
I don't think that's what worship's supposed to be about.
All right.
Maybe we're missing the point.
Well, there. Oh, my gosh. We're off the rails. President Obama calling on Americans to abandon ideological purity tests in politics. He says compromise shouldn't be frowned upon and described Twitter outrage as not activism. What do you think?
Compromise here? Should not be frowned upon.
Correct.
And Twitter outrage is not activism?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know how familiar you guys are with the Twitter outrage.
Not on Twitter.
I'm not on Twitter.
But I am familiar. There's a reason I'm not on Twitter.
Yeah, I'm on the Twitter. I mean, I just kind of observe some things. Is it the Twitter?
You say the Twitter?
Yeah, sure.
Why not? Tweet.
I'm on the Facebook. I've tweeted. I've Twittered.
You are not woke.
I'm not unwoke.
You're asleep.
Napping. I'm old. I need a lot of naps. So I get where he's coming from. I think there is... You know, as the resident millennial on the podcast, I'll speak for my generation.
Yeah.
I think we have developed a habit of feeling good about ourselves because we said something angry on Twitter. Like, oh, I called this out on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Now I don't have to actually do anything to bring about real change. Sure. I can just yell at someone from a distance. Mm-hmm. I don't have to have any real interaction with them.
Yeah, that's not limited to Twitter.
He's using this as an example. Okay. But I think that the Twitter outrage is one place where it's playing out in particular. Sure. Now, right? So, for instance, after Me Too movements or during the Me Too movements, right, guys all across the country can, throw out support and throw out anger at people who have been accused of things, but don't do anything to change how they treat the women in their life day to day.
For right? sure.
I think that would be an example of this, that we're not taking seriously, it actually means that I have to be, or I should be living differently, or I should be aware of my own actions. Instead, I feel good about myself because I yelled at someone else for something they were doing. In fact, I don't know if Barack Obama would have been referencing this at all, but there was a study at one point, I'd have to look up to find out where this was, but it was a study on racist ideologies in the United States. And there was a lot of evidence that showed that after Barack Obama was elected to his first term, people were more willing to express racist ideologies or racist opinions, make racist comments or something like that, racist jokes, something like that. They're more willing to do that because they felt justified by having voted for an African-American for president. So, I voted for a black president, so now I can say these things because I'm not really racist because I voted for a black president.
Mm-hmm. They have a black friend.
Right, yeah, exactly. And so I think this is a lot of the same kind of thing. Like, I said something, I told What's-Her-Face, that celebrity that I don't know, I told her that she was a real jerk for buying that thing from some company that made something in another, place. That's a great example. But I'm not going to stop buying products from some other company that makes things in another place.
Sure.
That example really went downhill quickly.
Yeah. This idea of purity, and you've never compromised, and you're always politically woke, and all that stuff, Barack Obama speaking here, you should get over that quickly. The world is messy. There are ambiguities.
Truth.
People who do really good stuff have flaws.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that this is an important lesson here, or important things, especially as we kind of go further down this rabbit hole in today's podcast. Both sides are kind of having these more, and he mentioned really purity tests of you're either 100% with us or you're against us.
Yep.
And and that's the kind of the thing. Either you're right with us, you agree with us on every aspect that we play out there from every possible issue, or we never want to talk to you. You're you're not woke, you're useless, you should be criticized on Twitter and go away.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think by working in politics, I'm sure he's had to navigate compromise and working with people with ideological differences than himself.
Yeah. And I would say woke culture is probably particularly unique to a younger population, but the older generation has their own versions of woke culture.
Sure.
So it is not unique to a millennial or Gen Z, whatever generation. It's pervasive. Yeah.
Have you ever gone on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram or whatever social media site you prefer? And
MySpace,
sure. LinkedIn.
On the professional side.
And experienced this kind of online outrage.
Like directed at me?
No, directed at somebody else.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, all the time.
For sure.
Have you been a part of it, do you think?
I don't think I have been a part of it. And that's, I say that, admitting I have flaws, and there are plenty of ways in which I probably have done things that I'm not aware of, but in my social media presence, I'm very, very aware of what I say and how I act to other people. In part because for as long as I've been on social media, I've been aware that I have a public role in a church and in that capacity. And so I've just been aware of what that looks like.
I certainly would agree. Maybe a little bit smart enough or self-aware enough to know I should not put things out there on social media. That does not mean I have not been caught up in the cascade or the thing of internet outrage without throwing a like or comment out there.
Right.
I'm still there. Yep. I'm just not doing that.
Yep.
So he continued in his little summit here. There is a sense sometimes of the way we make change is to be as judgmental as possible about other people, and that's enough.
Hmm.
Like, if I tweet or hashtag about how you didn't do something right or use the wrong verb, then I can sit back and feel pretty good about myself because, man, you see how woke I was? I called you out. I'm going to get on TV, watch my show, watch Grown-ish. That's not activism. That's not bringing about change.
Sorry, I'm having this moment of listening to Patrick and hearing Barack Obama through you. It's just really entertaining to listen to you talk about these. I'm sorry.
Sure.
I'm back on track.
Many people have said I sound presidential.
Sure. That's exactly what I was thinking.
That's not bringing about change. If all you're doing is casting stones, you're probably not going to get that far. Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah, I think that's a valuable lesson for us to start. Where did he start with that? I know we ended up at the casting steps, but he started with...
That's a life lesson. That's not just I mean...
There's since sometimes the way of making change is to be as judgmental as possible about other people, and that's enough.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think we get that all, like, we're not into coalition building anymore. We're more interested in finding an all-in answer that's 100% the way that I want it to be than looking to bring people along in a compromise scenario. And it's just, it's ineffective, it's destructive, it's brought us to where we are now. It's, ugly.
Yeah, I think that public shaming is not really going to get us very far. The best it can get us is people just being like, well, I just should not tweet anything or put anything out there out of fear of criticism from one side or the other. And inwardly or to my inner circle, I can say what I want, but I'm fearful of disagreeing with the masses out for due to public shaming. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's necessarily appropriate. Mm-hmm. Again, if the goal is just to cast stones, I know a guy that was against that. It's Jesus.
Oh, wait, what?
The man, JC. Yeah, I think this is pretty good life advice. What I like a lot about this is probably the people that would most be connected to this and hopefully changed by this would be people that voted for Barack Obama,
if they were old enough,
Or would vote for a Barack Obama. And so he's not looking across to people with different ideologies than himself and saying, you need to change. He's looking to people that he can identify with and saying, this is how we should change.
Yeah.
We should look at the world differently, or we should express things differently. And so this doesn't mean that you abandon ideologies or these woke ideas about gender, sexuality, LGBTQ rights, things like that. It just means if somebody is not on the same page as you, publicly shaming them, casting stones, hating them on Twitter is not going to accomplish anything.
Yeah.
That's not going to bring about any real social change. There are better ways to do that.
Sure.
So that's not giving up your ideologies. It's saying, think about how you are expressing them in this world.
Yep.
Right.
All right, let's move on here because we have something here. The Golden Rule 2020.
This is like breaking news.
Good job, Patrick.
Thank you. Breaking news.
That's all right. I don't know.
Yeah, so this was November 3rd. So for us recording a few days ago, for you listening, a few more days ago.
A little over a week.
Yeah.
Breaking as it gets.
Yes. This is an initiative put on by Christian leaders throughout our country 1 year before the 2020 election with this thing called the Golden Rule 2020.
We really are 1 year away from that, aren't we?
We really are.
Because we just had Election Day, so we're like a year.
There you are.
365 days.
That's how it works.
Yep. Here we go.
Less than a year, no.
Buckle up. Oh, yeah, 363 days.
Are the time of listening?
No, today's Wednesday. Who knows? 364 days.
Continue, Patrick. Yes.
Golden Rule 2020 states, we are Christians with different theological and political views who have come together to express concern about the polarization and incivility that is tearing our country apart. We are also deeply troubled by the prospect of an angry and hateful political campaign season in 2020 that will further divide us as a nation. We also believe that if enough people follow this golden rule principle, so this would be Jesus' command, do unto others as you would have them do unto you, it will help generate the respect and civility we so desperately need in our country. So this is a Christian belief system. A lot of different people, a lot of different church leaders have signed it, from Baptist evangelicals to the ALCA's own bishop, Bishop Eaton, have signed this and are on board with this.
Yep.
So what do you think about Golden Rule 2020?
I mean, I think that's how we should live even past 2020. That's all you get. Like, really?
We'll try for a year, so it goes.
364
days. I don't know about you guys, but I mean, growing up, that's what we heard. You know, like from my parents. My parents would tell me, well, treat other people the way you want to be treated. You hear it at church. You could, like, isn't this just, maybe it's not. I mean, it's not just common.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
I mean, look around.
Does it seem like it's common sense? No, it's not.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just.
And, you know, I mean, I think there's a number of things here. I think it's interesting that a group of pan-Christian leaders are coming together on something like this, because certainly all of these Christian leaders would not agree right. on a variety of political and theological issues. They'd have very different understandings of how they should uh-huh. be interacting in that. And yet they've said, in our discourse with one another, we should be moving towards civility. We should be moving towards mm-hmm. Being able to have conversation. I think, Patrick, I don't remember if you said this on the podcast or if there's been other conversations, but you've often said, like, hey, you know, these other people are our brothers and sisters in Christ. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, like, it's way too easy for us to forget that. And certainly we should be having the same mindset, even if they're not, mm-hmm. you know, even if they would not identify as a Christian, mm-hmm. we should still have this mindset, sure. but especially if we're having this mindset with other Christians.
And I think just, like, shouldn't we respect each other? I mean, like, it's even, I don't agree with everything that mm-hmm. everybody says, and I'm not going to, and I don't expect people to agree with everything I right. say or do. Sure. And, like, that doesn't mean I don't respect people as people.
Sure.
And,
but,
you know,
yeah.
just...
I think, like, there is nothing that turns someone away from Christianity faster than Christians sniping at one another.
Yes. Oh, for sure.
Two Christians mm-hmm. getting in a Twitter rage mm-hmm. fight, or even on in a in-person rage fight, mm-hmm. right? I mean, there is, when we both are claiming to love Jesus mm-hmm. and are just going to treat each other like that, like, I have no interest right. in being a part of that. So I think it's a really interesting motive. You know, it's a big broad brush stroke by sure. a lot of large organizations. Mm-hmm. I don't know that it'll have any real teeth, to dig in and to make a change. But I think it's a worthy goal to say, hey, all of our people, we should all be working towards being more intentionally civil with one another.
Yeah,
I agree.
I think these are all good things. Again, just because Bishop Eaton signed the statement and said, yeah, let's do this, doesn't mean every person within the LCA is now, like, going to be speaking with kindness, civility, and respect. I mean, right. like, in fact, probably the majority of the ELCA might not even know that this even happened.
Sure. Right. I think the majority of Americans might not even know.
Yeah. Yeah, but it is socially methodist. So this Golden Rule 2020 is inviting congregation individuals to do two things. One, pray for the healing and divisions in our country. Mm-hmm. And two, promote the use of the Golden Rule in our own political discussions and election activities in 2020. So this is definitely centered around our political talk. Mm-hmm. And we can also acknowledge, and Katie and Pastor David, you kind of mentioned this already, it's bad out there.
Yeah.
And Barack Obama is even admitting that it's not just a disagreement about ideologies. It is a disagreement that is very personal, mm-hmm. and that is a very personal attacks mm-hmm. From one side to the other. And this is a weird time, right? Because I remember when during Barack Obama's first campaign, and he was going up against John McCain mm-hmm. For the presidential election, and at one of John McCain's rallies, a woman got up and said, yeah. like, I don't trust Barack Obama. I think he's a Muslim. And is going to destroy this country.
And I think she said socialist as well, if I remember.
I'm going off memory here too.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And John McCain said no and shut it down.
Yeah.
And said, no, that's not true. He's a kind, loving family man whom I happen to disagree with on how the country mm-hmm. should be
sure.
run.
Mm-hmm.
Probably one of the best moments of that election campaign.
Yep.
Even though John McCain was not, ultimately did not win the election, Barack Obama did. I count that as a flagship moment in election policy, mm-hmm. politics. That was powerful.
Mm-hmm.
One side looking to the other and saying, we're not going to talk about our opponent that way.
Yeah.
This is, we're talking about ideologies, not personal.
People.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I've read political analysis of that moment that have said that that actually hurt John McCain with a base,
yeah.
To say, like, to denounce those quote unquote values actually hurt him rather than it helping. Like, for me, that, you know, that was encouraging for me to see someone, running for office mm-hmm. treat their opponent that way.
Yeah.
But for many people, it was not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's part of this idea of, like, one, you know, both sides want to see the other side as the enemy because
mm-hmm.
it's easier.
Yeah.
It's safer. To see them as the enemy. We don't want to see them as, these are people that love their kids. These are people that support their families and their spouses.
And what's best for America.
Yeah, and that they want good things for America. It's easier to see them as they are either socialist or fascist.
Mm-hmm.
They are either
woke or not
woke. Well, are there they're either
sleep unwoke?
Yeah, they're either calling for open borders, or they want every person who's not white to be kicked out of this country. Mm-hmm. One of the two. I know, in a stage of polarize extremes, it. And I think what's hard right now is sometimes our political candidates are leaning into these extremes. Mm-hmm. They're not doing, I think, what John McCain did a very good job of trying to pull back the reins on mm-hmm. these things. They're fanning the flames mm-hmm. of these things. So they're sure. saying, yeah, you know.
And these are all candidates. This is not mm-hmm. calling out one side sure. or not. This is everybody is a part of this right now.
It's a
machine.
It would not be surprising if in an election, somebody said this about Barack Obama now, and the candidate might say, I think you're right. Yeah. I think he is a secret terrorist, and, you know, and we need to do everything in our power to stop him.
Right.
You know, and so I think hopefully the golden rule empowers us to say, even if I disagree vehemently with people, I still think kindness is valuable, regardless mm-hmm. of where their political beliefs, because mm-hmm. right. kindness is valuable to me.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I find it valuable in how I interact with the world. Yep. And not about how whether or not that person on the other side is deserving of it or not.
You know what's interesting about the golden rule, as I'm sitting here thinking about that? The golden rule, as I am recalling, is treat others as you would want to be treated.
Yes.
It is not wait for others to treat you as you would want to be treated and then treat them mm-hmm. accordingly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? It's treat others first. Mm-hmm. And so the first thing that we do as people who are trying to follow Jesus is we're doing the hard work of discipleship. Is treat others as we would want to mm-hmm. be treated. And so the first action that we take is kindness, love, grace, generosity, even for those people that we vehemently disagree with, mm-hmm. and even when they are throwing it back in our face, mm-hmm. right? You know, we have an opportunity to be hit in the cheek, and we turn the other cheek. We have mm-hmm. an opportunity for them to take our coat, and we offer them our cloak as well. These were the readings that we just had on Sunday as part of our All Saints lessons. Mm-hmm. And so it's a powerful, it has the opportunity to be very powerful if we take this call seriously of we don't wait for the other side to do what's right. Mm-hmm. We do what's right first, even if it costs us, because we know that it is better.
Yeah.
And it is more in line with what Jesus would have us do. And that doesn't mean that we can't speak truth in love. That we can't, you know, that we can't challenge power in love, mm-hmm. But that we do all of those things rather yeah. than throwing a grenade and yelling on Twitter. We do these things in a way that engages in love to show people the love that has first mm-hmm. been shown to us.
Well, not everybody out there is on board with Golden Rule 2020.
What?
Are you familiar with the website Patheos?
I am.
Are you familiar, Katie?
I've heard of it.
From me.
Yep.
When I said we're going to talk about this.
Because we talked about it in preparation for this episode. Yeah.
Patheos is a religious website that is certainly left-leaning.
Yeah.
It's probably Christian-based, but they have articles from all world religions. It's a sure. you know, desire to be, you know, interfaith, you know, mm-hmm. towards other things. But one of their writers, a fellow member of our church body,
yep.
This guy named Clint Schneckloth. And he put this out there, so I'm comfortable yeah, saying his name. Yeah. Golden Rule 2020 is spiritual gaslighting. That's the
hell. Hold on. I need a definition on gaslighting.
Need another definition of gaslighting.
I know woke now. Katie, give me a gaslighting definition here.
It's like when you make someone feel like they're crazy.
Correct. That's ultimately what it's designed to do.
Like, psychologically, like, you make them feel like they're going, like, you yeah. are crazy. Like, you start to make them feel like they're going crazy.
What does it have to do with gaslight?
So it is based off a British play from the 1930s called Gaslight.
Wait, so there's a modern, like, millennial term?
I don't think this is modern. Because this is
gaslighting's not? Okay,
this is a play that was designed, like, in the play, the husband was trying to trick and deceive his wife into thinking she was crazy.
Right.
By using gaslights?
By using tricks and deceit.
Okay.
So that's where the term comes from, gaslighting.
I've never heard this term before. All right. Okay. I assumed it was another woke thing.
Yeah. All right, so that would be like if we're in an argument and I try to misrepresent what you're saying yeah. or I diminish it or make you second guess what you're thinking is true.
Okay.
I'm
with you now. All right. So it's spiritual.
A little bit toxic.
It's spiritual.
a lot of it toxic.
Spiritually right. making you think you're crazy. That's yes. That's what the golden rule of 2020 is. Okay, yes. That's what he's claiming.
Yes.
Yes. So first, he has an analogy here to open up his article. A pastor sits down in a counseling session. One spouse verbally abuses the other, gaslights, and shouts at them. The abused spouse attempts to protect themselves, stand up for themselves, and maintain appropriate boundaries, at which point the abusive spouse calls foul and accuses the abused of being the abuser. The pastor from the sideline says, "Hey, you two, you're so polarized. Can't you both just follow the golden rule?" That's his opening analogy.
Yikes.
That's supposed to draw us into what he thinks this golden rule 2020 thing is.
So the golden rule is being dismissive to what...
Yeah,
that's how I kind of look at that. His
in the scenario that he's describing, correct. Yes.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah, like I don't argue with what he's saying, except... Well, I mean, I probably will argue with what he's saying eventually. But yeah, I mean, if that's the scenario, A... That I don't think that any self-respecting pastor offering
is going to
serious
say.
Marital counseling advice right. would say that. And B, I'm not yet sure how he's going to apply this to what we're talking about.
Okay, continue.
So let's hear where he goes. So let's buckle in and see what happens.
I agree. That's not right. I don't think that's this.
Right. this might not be the same thing.
But we'll see what points he has to support his analogy here.
Okay.
These kinds of calls for moderation aren't surprising from religious leaders. Faith communities are fairly notorious for their attempts to remain in a kind of milquetoast middle. But such appeals become deeply problematic when they protect those abusing power and increase the vulnerability of others harmed by such abuse.
Do you need a definition for milquetoast?
I don't, only because you gave it to me earlier. Fine. Yes. Didn't know that milk toast was a thing. It sounds really gross.
I didn't know milk on my toast. Until Patrick told us.
It is kind of a timid response.
Right.
Submissive.
Submissive, yeah. So what do we think about this? This is his first kind of point. Appeals, they protect those abusing power and increase the vulnerability of others harmed by abuse.
I don't think it's completely fair. I mean, I see where he's coming as far as the like generic and perhaps even submissive response. Mm-hmm. I can see that. Like, yeah, from a national level... Most church bodies put out generally pretty neutral, pretty harmless mm-hmm. things
yeah.
because they're trying to speak on behalf of a large body of diverse people with different right. opinions. Yeah. So, yeah, that's probably a fair point. What was the second part about promoting abusers?
They protect those abusing power and increase the vulnerability of others harmed by abuse.
I don't see how that's happening with this particular, with the golden rule statement, but I will let it ride for now and see where he goes.
Yeah, I think when it comes down to the ELCA, which is definitely a left-leaning Christian denomination,
sure.
So compared to other Christian denominations,
yeah.
it is left. But it is not, this I mean, every person within the ELCA is a left-leaning Christian.
Sure.
In fact, across, if you looked at national elections and where the ELCA finds, we're fairly divided.
Mm-hmm.
That about half of us are voting Democratic, half of us are voting Republican. Based on other Christians, we might be more left.
Right.
That doesn't mean
the fact that half is voting Democratic, I think, would make us more left than others.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
Not that we are. It's, yeah. You get what I'm saying, people.
That we're not necessarily a Democratic church, but it's more by being in the middle.
Yeah.
It creates it more left
in the
than
sense
most
of the Democratic
Christians.
Party.
Yeah.
We are not. Yeah.
Yeah. So I do think that saying kindness matters is not protecting people abusing power and making those. Harmed by it or make them more vulnerable. I don't necessarily see a clear one-to-one connection there. Now, are there things that we could do that protect people abusing power and make those who are vulnerable more abused? Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think kindness is that.
Right.
Right.
I do think apathy could be that, or I think a veneer, a sheen of kindness, mm-hmm. It could be that, but mm-hmm. I don't think that's what kindness actually is.
Sure.
All right, here we go. Unfortunately, back from Clint, Golden Rule 2020 is an example of church leaders living in ecclesial political reality. Their call for civility is not about doing the right thing. It's about not losing voters and maintaining the status quo, which in the church context is members all kind of get along because of their general lack of truth speaking.
I think he has a fair critique. That in general, national church bodies are interested in keeping membership.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to put out things that cause people to leave a denomination,
mm-hmm.
right? And so that's a fair critique. And does that cause a church to, at a national level, struggle to speak truth to power at some contexts? Probably.
Yeah.
That's probably reasonable. And yeah, I think, you know, there is a political... A political or ecclesial reality. Is that what you called it? Ecclesial political reality?
Ecclesial political reality.
An ecclesial political reality. It is. You know, there probably is something like that where, you know, Bishop Eaton, for what it's worth, is weighing political options. What does it cost her and what does it gain her in her relationships with leaders of other denominations to be a part of this, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, to be a part of it, does she make more friends and connections that allow her to move the greater body of Christ in a positive direction in the long haul? I mean, is she making a small sacrifice here for something greater in the future? She's making that calculation. Her staff is making that calculation as they sign on to this. I guarantee she didn't just wake up one morning and sign it without any thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, there's absolutely an ecclesial political reality to this. That's not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah. Especially as we mentioned earlier, our members in our churches are mixed.
Right.
This is not, like in some denominations, they could look at their polling and say like, wow, we're 90% voting for right or Republican candidates. And so getting in the pulpit or kind of in our literature, kind of leaning that direction, either explicitly mm-hmm. or indirectly, mm-hmm. is kind of doing what our congregations are on board with. And so when you have a mixed congregation, you can't go one way or the other too far without risking losing people. Mm-hmm. And so maybe Clint would say, you should just go all in on one side. And if the other side doesn't like it, well, too bad.
Well, yeah. I think what Clint is perhaps trying to get at, but I think he's missing the mark from what I'm reading. I don't think he's hitting this. You know, there is a way to speak about politics that acknowledges, first and foremost, the gospel of Jesus Christ.
Yes.
Because Jesus is not political, but Jesus' words have political reality mm-hmm. or have political ramifications, mm-hmm. right? And so if we follow seriously Jesus' various calls to discipleship, it will greatly affect how we live our life and how we live in the political reality in which we face. That does not mean it's going to make you vote Democrat or make you vote Republican. Mm-hmm. It means that when you go to the polls, you're going to be thinking about the things that Jesus would be thinking about. And you're going to hopefully be electing people that will help enact policies that you think Jesus would want enacted, right? Mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So that might be that you wake up and you do your prayer, you do your research, and you vote for someone who's going to tear down the welfare system in the United States because you as an individual and you as congregations want to do more to care for the poor. So we don't need the government to do that. We need congregations and individuals to step up and do that. That could be a political reality that also is serving what Jesus wants to do. Mm-hmm. Another political reality is that someone could say, no, we need the government to step in and offer this welfare system, and so I'm going to vote for someone who supports that. Both of those can be based in a deep religious belief that Jesus wants us to care for the poor. Mm-hmm. It's a different understanding of the practical effect of
how you go about it. Yeah.
All right. This is going to be a mouthful. We'll continue on his article here, his critique. I mean, the Jesus who said, do unto others as you would have them do unto you, also called the Pharisees and Sadducees a brood of vipers. This Jesus said he came to cause divisions at every level, right down to individual households. Jesus didn't speak in such divisive ways out of sheer antagonistic demagoguery. No, he spoke this way because he knew the truth that he was bringing. The kingdom power, or the kingdom he was announcing, would naturally be resisted by those in authority, those with wealth, those with power. Jesus might say in the context of Golden Rule 2020, whoever loves civility more than me cannot be my disciple. Katie's looking at me confused.
I am. I'm like, what?
Yeah, this is a mouthful.
Let me see.
I'll let you take a look at this.
It feels to me like he is trying to apply Golden Rule 2020 to every issue that has happened ever.
Yes.
And that is not how I read Golden Rule 2020.
I agree.
I read Golden Rule 2020 applying to a particular election cycle.
Yes.
In this election cycle, let us strive towards civility with one another, recognizing that there are good people of faith who are trying to follow Jesus on both sides of a political spectrum.
Yes.
And in the end, we're going to wake up and someone is going to be president and we are still going to have to live next to our neighbors and we're still going to have to sit next to our brothers and sisters mm-hmm. in Christ in the mm-hmm. pews on Sunday morning and we're still going to have to go to communion with people and we're so, you know, let us look for this cycle, let's do this. That's what I see mm-hmm. Golden Rule 2020 applying to.
Yeah.
And so I feel like he's taking that blowing it up to say, well, that means that we can't call anything. We have to be civil, so we can't call anyone out on when they're doing something bad. We can't you know, tell anyone that they're wrong ever. And I don't think that's what... I think you can be civil and tell someone they're wrong.
Mm-hmm. You bet.
I think you can be civil and call out power when it's acting inappropriately.
Yeah.
You can do all those things without lobbing a Twitter rage fight thing, battle royale, something. I don't know what the kids call it these days. But you can do all that. Yeah. And be civil at the same time. Those two things do not need to be mutually exclusive. Yeah, if Golden Rule 2020 served just to say, well, everybody, you know, go back to sitting in the same room and not talking about the issues that were really dividing us, but just sit there and be quiet and be nice to each other. If that was the purpose of Golden Rule 2020, yeah, I would be in a disagreement with it too. I don't think that's its purpose. This is not a return to Thanksgiving dinner where we're not allowed to talk about money and politics.
Yeah, I think that's a very superficial way of looking at, like, of looking at the Vision 2020
thing. Right. Golden Rule.
Golden Rule. Vision.
Vision 2020 is golden.
There's lots of 2020s happening around me right now.
We're it's about to be a whole lot more 2020 things happening around you.
Almost every day. Well, 2 weeks ago, I had a long conversation with one of our parishioners here.
Sure.
Person in our congregation, a good friend of mine. We are definitely on opposite ends of the political spectrum. Mm-hmm. We had a long discussion about race, immigration, sexuality, all these things kind of bubbling up. You know, we spoke almost over 2 hours about these things together. And I think we both walked away probably not all that changed in our belief system, but with still mutual respect and understanding. We both worship the same God. We both have the same desire for the kids in our congregation to have a greater knowledge of who Jesus is in their lives.
Right.
And we both can sit together at communion or in a room and enjoy the presence of one another, even with these political divisions.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay, go ahead. No, you go ahead.
I think that's where Clint would disagree, right? I mean, I think his intention in that conversation would be to say, I'm right.
Yeah.
And I need to change this person's opinion because their opinion is causing someone else to suffer, be abused, whatever. Mm-hmm. And that is not true in all cases.
Yeah.
Right? There are plenty of theological differences that I have with people where the theological difference that I have might not be how I think God's love is being expressed in the world, but it's not directly causing someone to suffer. Mm-hmm. It's not directly causing abuse. And we are perhaps too quick to say that's abusive just because it disagrees with us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Katie, what do you think about this idea? Whoever loves civility more than me cannot be my disciple. That's his...
More than Patrick?
Well, that's his Jesus quote.
That's his Jesus quote?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't agree with that. I think we can be civil, and I think that we can have our own thoughts and ideas and opinions on politics and everything else in the world and still be followers of Jesus.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think Clint might not realize the ramifications of his own words in this case, because whoever loves civility more than Jesus or more than me cannot be my disciple. You know, I would assume that Clint would also be very intentional about having interfaith dialogue with other groups and things like that, and wanting to be welcoming and inviting to those conversations as well. And you could argue that that is liking, or that that is putting civility before Jesus.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is a... I don't know Clint directly. We know people through, or we know... I know of him through people, but I don't know him directly, so I can't speak for his words. Reading his words here, I think he's putting something out there that he perhaps is not fully thought through, doesn't realize that those fingers that he's pointing are also pointing back at himself. And it seems like he has not done an appropriate amount of self-reflection before he put out this
And I don't think
pretty angry response.
This is saying, like, being civil and kind does not mean love that more than Jesus.
Right.
That's because you love Jesus, you should be civil and kind.
Right.
Like, I mean, to twist some Clint's words, I would say whoever loves justice more than Jesus cannot be my disciple.
Sure.
And again, if you love Jesus, I think you're going to embrace justice. But he's saying civility is putting the cart before the horse, and I disagree.
Yeah.
I think you should be kind because of your faith in Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And that does not mean kindness equals you're not Jesus' disciple. All right, so we went over the two rules of the Golden Rule 2020 earlier. Pray for the healing of the divisions in our country and promote use of the Golden Rule in our own political discussions and election activities in 2020. Clint suggests these instead. Pray that God's kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven. That's one. And number two, promote always speaking the truth, whatever the cost, in our political discussions and election activities in 2020. Point the finger in the right direction. Tell us specifically who is the one abusing. Name the abuses of power Don't issue statements that are quivering codependent scolds posing as faithfulness. Stand with those being harmed. What do we think about his two new suggestions?
First one, fine. Pray for God's kingdom to come on earth. Yeah. Fine. I think that's good. Mm-hmm. I think we do that every week when we pray the Lord's Prayer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Your kingdom come, your will be done, right?
And he is using kingdom, which is kind of a gendered neutral version of kingdom.
Okay. You know, the second one, what was it? Promote
always speaking the truth,
sure,
whatever the cost,
sure,
in our political discussions and election activities in 2020.
I have no problem with always speaking the truth, but I don't see why I can't be civil when I do that.
Right, and you can be civil, and my truth might not be the exact same truth as Pastor David's truth or as your truth, because we all have our own personal truths and the way that we interpret things and have our own thoughts and ideas as well. And I don't think that means that we have to hate each other, because we don't share everything the same.
I mean, look, I like to think that I speak truth when I need to speak truth. I don't think that I have, at least not in the last 5 months, right? Well, that's what I can remember. I don't think that I've intentionally lied or backed down in order to try to appease someone that I disagree with.
Yeah.
But I can speak truth in love, and I can, you know, and how else are people's hearts and minds going to be changed if that's what we want? How else are people's hearts and minds going to be changed other than speaking truth in love and taking the time to speak and have civil conversations where people feel heard and respected? If people don't feel heard and respected, they're not going to have any interest in hearing what you have to say.
Yeah.
And so if we're not striving first to engage in a level of civility so that we can speak truth, again, I don't know. Yeah.
And this doesn't have speaking the truth in love. It's just speaking the truth whatever the cost, which I think is the opposite of speaking the truth in love. So I do think, well, not maybe the opposite of speaking.
I'm just listening.
But I do think it's not the same. They're branching off of a core idea. But this is the idea, and I think maybe Clint or whatever side of the political spectrum you're on, the idea is like, well, we're 100% right.
Right.
And the other side is the bad guys. Mm-hmm. They're 100% wrong. So it's okay for me to shout over them. It's okay for me to shame them. It's okay for me to do Twitter outrage, as Barack Obama mentioned, because they're the bad guys, because they're wrong. So I don't have to listen to what they have to say. They're wrong. I don't have to engage with them civilly, because they're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
They're the racists. They're the Nazis. Or from the other side, they're the socialists. They don't care about traditional American values. Mm-hmm. They want to destroy this country from within.
Anti-American. Yeah.
Yeah, that they're both shouting these things at each other. And they're looking at each other as the enemy instead of looking at each other as brothers and sisters. And I think that does change the way we have to communicate.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, before the podcast, you know, Pastor David, you and I talked about this as an example of like, if two sides, we live in a divided church politically, and that means on the issue of abortion, we have a divided church politically.
Sure.
And both sides could be very firmly convinced that they are right.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that they're right, they are championing the injustice of the vulnerable by being on their side. They believe that firmly.
Yep.
That this is not a question. They both can point to scripture. They both point to who their God is and say, this is why I believe this. And so what happens? Are we supposed to yell at one another until one side just gives up? I mean, like, that is not going to accomplish really mutually seeking what's best in this hard situation of what do we do with the issue of abortion. But coming together and saying, we can be civil, we can sit down with one another, break bread, share wine, and have a hard conversation where we both walk away saying, I disagree with you, but I do love you.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, matters.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll finish up here with what Clint has to say. In other words, Golden Rule 2020 encourages essentially the opposite of the ELCA social statements. It will not have the net result of silencing voices currently speaking prophetically. It will have the net result of silencing voices currently speaking prophetically in our own church, while those idols they are denouncing will simply ignore what they see as another diatribe from the politically correct liberals. There are many in our church and world who are saying, the emperor has no clothes. Our bishops just said, shush. It's not nice to say that. Final analogy here. What do you think?
Attention grabbing doesn't to me speak to the situation. I think there are plenty of people who are still going to be prophetic voices, and I think there are ways that'll continue to function in a meaningful way. I don't think Bishop Eaton or any of the other bishops who signed on to this would say, we want people to stop being a prophetic voice.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's their intention at all. I don't think that's how I read Vision 2020.
Yeah. I would agree. I don't read it that way either. And I think that there are Christians out there who should be campaigning and are actively championing the rights of refugees, of immigrants, actively championing the rights of the homeless and the poor, actively championing the rights of those most vulnerable in our country, whether that's transgendered youth, whether that's LGBTQ Americans, whether that's those of different races, ethnicities, or religious creeds, any minority everywhere. But I think sometimes we have this idea of like, not all of us can be equally outraged about everything.
Yeah.
We only have so much energy. We cannot be... Because then we're just ping-ponging outrage back and forth between one another, constantly just getting on our computers, using our Twitter culture to cast stones at the enemy, but we can't actually do anything because we're not putting the resources. So if we see Christians out there that are championing the rights of things we respect, supporting them in their ministry and what their efforts are doing, while I'm also being civil with my conversation with my neighbors. Mm-hmm. Both those things are not mutually exclusive. Mm-hmm. And both those things I think should happen. But I do think even saying the emperor has no clothes isn't necessarily an unloving statement.
Right.
And so if you were walking around with no clothes and didn't know it, you would want people to tell you.
Yep.
So it's just saying, how do you say it? Do you point at the emperor and laugh, or do you try to cover him up?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So that's Golden Rule 2020. Hopefully all of us can make that some of our motto. Whether we agree with Clint a little or a lot or none, I do think there is value in saying this political season, I want it to be better than the last political season. Yeah. I want,
good Lord,
I don't want a continued divide of two Americas existing in the same space, hating one another. Yeah. I don't want that.
Yep.
You know, and so finding mutual ground, I think, is going to be valuable for us all. Well, that brings us to the end of our podcast.
So long, farewell. I can't sing anymore. That would cost us money.
Yeah. Arvita
Saint. No, if you say it, we gotta pay.
No, but see, I did it. So it's,
oh, it's okay.
There was a pause in there.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Hey, if you,
where can you find us?
If you liked what you heard, be sure to check us out. We're on iTunes, on the Google Play, on the Spotify, all the things. Share it out with your friends, neighbors, wherever you go. It's a great way to be civil. You can share this podcast with somebody. Say, hey, check this out. And we'd love to hear from you. If you have thoughts on this conversation, if you want to know more about what Clint had to say or more about Golden Rule 2020, if you want to let us know how you're being civil in your election cycle that's coming forth, send us an email at beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com.
Awesome. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. We will see you next week.